Hi, everyone. This is that literary lady, and I'd like to welcome you all to the Sweethearts of the Triad. Today's sweetheart is Dr. Sue Polinsky. Sue is the founder of the longest woman-owned tech business in the Triad. She's an expert web designer, online executive, network architect, and bootstrap community organizer. She's the founder of Converge South, the Southeast's best-known online conference. Thank you for joining us today, Sue. How are you?
I'm happy to be here, and as I mentioned, my kids haven't given me grandkids yet, but they told me I have grand dogs, and that has to satisfy me. One of them had a little surgery this morning, and I just heard from the vet that she's fine. So my rule is everything is always fine, and I am great now, and I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. Thank you for being with us, and I'm glad the dog is okay, and fine. I'm going to go ahead and get started. I want to first start by asking you, Sue, how long have you, are you actually from the Triad? Were you born and raised here?
No, I think you have to live, your family has to live here at least 300 years before you're from here. We moved here in 1977 through my husband's job. I consider this home, and I don't imagine ever leaving. This is just the greatest place to be.
Gotcha.
I'm originally from a very small town on Long Island called Amityville. You may have heard of it.
Yes.
And now you can tell people that you have talked to the real Amityville Horror.
Well, I wouldn't call you a horror because I follow you and some great things. So it's not that scary, but yeah, I know I've heard of it.
Ask the people who work for me.
Uh-oh. Okay, Sue, tell us a little bit about the Converge South Conference and actually what bootstrapping is.
Bootstrapping is a term I learned from Robert Scoble, and I suppose anybody listening to this knows who Robert Scoble is.
Right.
Scoble came, and his last name is his name. Everybody calls him Scoble. He came to Converge South in 2006, and he returned 2 years later. And he was so impressed with the conference, he wanted to come back. He did a video interview with me about how I kind of put Converge South together. And he called that video Bootstrapping the Community, and I learned the word from him. So that I use it now. I'm a community organizer. You could call me a serial volunteer. But Converge South came from a single instant message that somebody sent me that said, gee, I wish Greensboro could have South by Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was in 2005 and 2004, and I didn't know what South by Southwest was, so I looked it up and I went, and then I replied, I don't know, why can't Greensboro have something like South by Southwest? And that's run by a professional company. I mean, the price of that is enormous.
Yeah,
and Greensboro's not that kind of city.
Right.
So we found ourselves 10 or 12 people who said, why can't we have something like that here? We found ourselves a home at NCA&T State University, which was part of our mission, bringing diversity to technology. And it's just grown every year since then. And this past year, we incorporated as a nonprofit. We have a board. Everybody's a volunteer. Nobody gets paid.
Okay.
And that's bootstrapping.
How if someone wanted to be a part of it, how would they become a part of that?
Oh, we're looking for you. If you want to become part, send an email. Find me on Twitter. The president this year is David Horn. You can also find him on Twitter. Just Google his name. You'll find him. We're always looking for volunteers. I don't think we've ever turned a volunteer down.
Okay. And when is the conference? What time of year?
It's usually in the fall, in October, which is a tough month to schedule in because at A&T we have to be careful not to schedule against a home football game. And since we started in 2005, there's been a proliferation of conferences, and October is a very full month. So we look at the calendar, we find out when Furniture Market is and make sure we're not scheduling then. We check the A&T home football schedule, And so we're usually in October, but not on a consistent date.
Gotcha, gotcha. Okay, okay. So they can just go to,
ConvergeSouth.com.
Okay, ConvergeSouth.com. That's pretty much easy to remember.
Yeah, and we're working on getting the site up for this year. What January is our month to get stuff done, so there's not much to see there right now, but there will be, my guess is, in about 2 weeks.
Well, okay, when this airs in February, so there should be something up at that time, right?
We hope so. We're volunteers.
Also, I show here that you're the oldest woman-owned technology company in the Triad. Can you tell us about your business?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, that's true, and my standard joke is, and that's not owned by the oldest woman, that's oldest woman-owned. Owning my own business was always on my bucket list. I've always worked for other people, and in 1998, the opportunity arose for me to take advantage of what I thought was the future, and that people... I used to be a computer trainer for a short time, and I just got the feeling that we just didn't need to teach people how to use Microsoft Word for 8 hours a day anymore, that the web was going to take off. And this is like 1994, 95, 96, but none of the companies I ever worked for thought the same way I did. They thought we would always have classes teaching people how to use stuff, and I didn't think we would. So in 98, when I had the opportunity, I took my cheap little computer, went to an empty bedroom in my house, and started this company with one client. And since then, mostly through word of mouth, we have grown every single year. We have full-time employees, we have permanent part-time employees, and we work virtually, which is just a fabulous way to work because you'll learn that the best graphic designers like to work at 2 a.m.
Yes,
so the idea, yeah. So the idea of having a brick and mortar did occur to me. It was something I thought seriously about around 2000, 2001, and as we started to hire more people, none of them wanted to come to an office.
Right.
So it seemed that we may put an addition onto the house. We've rewired, we've done stuff, and I've got all the connectivity I need to every single person who works here. Sometimes people come here and work, and sometimes it's completely virtual. And because we have do work all over the United States and in a couple of other countries, having an office just isn't that important for what we do. We've grown every single year and hired more people, and it's like a dream to own a business, watch it grow, manage it, learn how to do accounting, which is why I pay an accountant, and just get into knowing so much about small business and growing a small business. It's been a fabulous ride.
Well, great. I understand about that. I work from home too. I could have gotten an office, but I'm a workaholic, and that's the downside of having a office in your home, because you're more at 16, 20 hours, depending on what you're doing. But the luxury is that you can work in your pajamas, and you can get up in the morning.
My son tells me that I get too dressed up to work at home, but when it's snowing, I can work. When I'm having a bad hair day and I don't feel like getting dressed up, I can work. It is a danger because I get up at 5:30, deal with the dogs, and by 6 o'clock I'm answering email.
Right.
But the only rule I do have, unless there's a crisis, when it's time for dinner, and I work kind of straight through, except for lunch till dinner time, I will not go back and look at my computer after dinner. It's
really?
A rare day. I'm done.
I delete
125 emails a day. I
wow.
deal with and delete 125. I don't need to be reading email at 9 o'clock at night. It's nothing that critical. There has to be an end to the day.
I agree. I'm working on that in 2012, so maybe I'll call you for a consultation on how you actually do that.
Now, It took a while.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about your passion about nonprofits.
I'm kind of a serial volunteer. In the early days of trying to, I don't know what you want to call it, pay my dues or get connected, I stumbled across this thing called Leadership Greensboro. And I luckily got in the program. I was the class of 1998, which, of course, was a very special class, but every class will tell you that. And through Leadership Greensboro, I made amazing contacts. And everybody invited me to be on the board of their nonprofit because they wanted me to build them a website. Even though I thought I had other skills, they really wanted me to work with their technology. So for a few years, that's what I did. And I was on the board of so many nonprofits, or I was consulting with so many nonprofits. It was so frustrating to see the good work they could do if they only understood their technology a little better, if they knew how to use their stuff a little better. And in some cases, they needed to get more stuff. And it just it hit me very hard that these are the people who are taking care of people where I live, and I have some skills that can help them. So we became very close to some nonprofits, worked with them, and then were recommended to other nonprofits. And now nonprofits are 30 to 40% of our business, plus they go to conventions and they hear, and somebody asks them, and they said, call Sue. Sue will answer. So we get calls, I get calls personally all day long from nonprofits all over the country apologizing for bothering me, which is something nonprofits do that I don't like. And they're stuck with this, or how do we get this, or do I know a resource for this? And generally, I answer them. I mean, you know, it's usually a 10-minute thing, so I answer them. And then sometimes, you know, a couple months later, it's like, what would it take to redesign our website? What would it take to put a network in here? Where can we get a grant for this? So on occasion, it turned into business. And then it became both a passion and a business, and it's grown every single year. If it's nonprofit and it's technology, there's a really good chance we know it.
Okay. Now, how do you overcome the struggles of finding the right contractors and so on without coming out of pocket a whole lot of money?
Well, you make some mistakes first, and then you learn from them. And we have a rule. If we're going to hire a contractor, because let's just take, for example, we need a .NET programmer for a project. Now, a .NET programmer is an extremely expensive guy, usually a guy, and I don't need to hire this person full-time. I used to, in my salad days, I used to hire anybody who was a .NET programmer. He had a full-time job, and he'd do it at night and on the weekends. And I got burned two or three times. Some guy comes home from work, and the kid is sick, and the wife is fed up, and, oh, I didn't get to it tonight, and had to take the kid to a soccer game on the week. So we just passed a rule. We are not hiring anybody as a contractor who this isn't his full-time job.
Right.
And by passing that rule, yes, we pay more money for them. But if something breaks or needs work at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, he's working.
Right.
This is his job. It's not like he's got a full-time job someplace else, and he can't get to it now because he's hiding it, you know, that he's working on the side. We don't hire anybody anymore who works on the side. It was a learning process. It was painful a couple of times. And it was costly a couple of times when we had to have things rebuilt. And, boy, we stopped that. And in the last 5 years, I've never hired a contractor who isn't recommended. I can see his work. And generally, we're dealing with men, and that's why I keep saying him or his.
Right, right.
And we just are very satisfied with the folks who work for us, and we have great relationships with them.
It's always good when you find that right person and you can continue to work with them, you know, throughout the future. You have some people that you work with them once and you don't see them anymore, and you kind of want to build that relationship, and that's what helps to make a business run smoothly. So I understand.
Absolutely, because some of our websites are what I call everlasting. We've got sites built in 2006 and 2007 that are working just fine now, but they need some tweaky thing here or improvement on the programming, and I want the same guy working on it.
Right.
Because
exactly.
He built it, I want him to improve it.
Exactly. Now, before we were talking about the Internet really coming into play in the early 90s, I remember as early as 91 being fascinated with the Internet and thinking that it was going to take off, or actually knowing that it was going to take off. How do you find, what differences do you find, of course there's a lot, but what differences do you find now than what you actually thought would happen when you first became an Internet user?
Well, it's really, you said 1991. I think that's the year the web was kind of invented, kind of 1991. Mm-hmm. I sent my first piece of email in 1984,
okay.
And I had Internet experience before there was a web, before there was a web browser,
okay.
Before there was Windows. So the stuff that I know is nuts and bolts, technology tools. Now, today, you're going to, if you're a Facebook expert, you go to your browser and you find your tools.
Right.
If you're a Twitter expert, you may have a Twitter application, but you're going to use tools that are web-based.
Right.
There were no web-based tools when we started. We learned HTML by looking at the source code and saying, how did they do that?
Right.
And we've kept up with HTML, and now we're building an HTML5. So it's really a balance. I think, I don't want to say these young people these days, but there is a definite advantage to knowing how to move files, knowing how to do it without attaching it to email.
Right.
Understanding the cloud, because it's understanding what protocols are. Everything that has a P in it is a protocol, like HTTP is
right.
A protocol, SMTP is sending email is a protocol. Understanding that it is a protocol gives me, I think, us old net folks, gives us an understanding where we can figure things out really quickly. I've also learned that I cannot be an expert in everything, so we hire them.
Right.
I've made the choice that I'm not going to be a Facebook expert, but we have a Facebook expert on staff.
Okay.
So that's kind of the difference. You have to, if you're going to own the company, you've got to know everything about how it works, but you don't have to push the paper and pencils on every job.
Okay. Now, I mentioned earlier that you are a doctor. You have a PhD in cultural diversity studies. Now, I won't even ask when you got that, just to be fair. But when you first started or when you got your degree, one, did you imagine that it would take you to where you are now? And two, how did it open the road to get to where you are today?
That's a question my mother asked me. The day I got my doctorate, I went over to see her, and I brought her flowers, and I said, your daughter's a doctor. And she looked at me with just the way mothers can do. Only mothers can push your buttons. She says, all right, so what can you do now with this? What kind of job can you get? And, you know, it's a mother thing. And
right.
What cultural diversity studies has taught me is the way people communicate. People from different cultures, people of gender, people of community, of socioeconomic status, of whatever, it's taught me how people communicate, which is what the web is all about. And the web is fairly female, female-brained, because if you've ever sat in a conversation with a bunch of women, you can go from this topic, to that topic, to something, to somewhere else, and it all makes sense. And if you feel like it, you can go back to the beginning, which is basically the forward and back buttons on a web browser.
Right.
So the advantage of it for me was to be able to look at my my client, who is their audience. So let's just pretend you're a commercial real estate broker.
Mm-hmm.
Well, your clients are not terribly web savvy. This is going back a few years.
Right.
We had to make things work for them, and it taught me everything about how to navigate a site. And site navigation drives the website. Not getting lost, not having orphaned pages, being able to get to, if I'm on the page telling me about something, I need to be able to get to contact me about this really fast. So the whole thing is that who's your audience? And if you are a Christian church, well, you've got one set of navigation. If you're selling widgets, well, that's a different kind of navigation. If you are a business that deals in a highly technical product, well, you better have a really good search on your site because that's what people are looking for. So it became, and no matter what page you're on, you better be able to get to any other page from there.
Right.
So that's, I finished my doctorate in June, I'm thinking 90 or 91, and it really made this whole transition to communicating, how people communicate, just natural for me.
Okay. This sounds exciting.
I love what I do. I love waking up in the morning.
I can tell by some of your tweets and some of your Facebook statuses that you actually do. So, before we go, I want to know if there's anything else you would like our audience to know, and what's next, or is there anything exciting on the horizon for Sue?
Well, Sue's at the age where she's considering she's not going to do this for the rest of her life, and I'm starting to do a little bit of branding of myself, and because I think I have a lot to contribute, I've thrown a conference for 7 years. I've never been a presenter. So I've not at my conference, but I do, it's not my conference, not at Converge South, but I am this year. I'm going to put my name in the hat and say, Sue's going to do a presentation. But
right.
I do presentations for community groups all the time. And in part, it works along with the fact that I can explain complicated things to anybody, and they can and make them understand. So I'm looking at the idea that when I retire from this, that I want to do some speaking. I think I'm a tech writer. I've written so many tech manuals. It's just amazing. But I want to write something else.
Right.
And I have the concept. I don't have the time, but
right.
I've got the concept, and I've even got an editor. I just need to get it together, and that's going to be one of the first things I do as I wind this down. Well, we're not talking about tomorrow. I'm still going to be around for 2 or 3 years. And I, through my community contacts, networking, Converge South, I've met some pretty important people, and I've decided that I'm important too.
Right.
I just haven't done those things yet that make that, you know, nationally known. So that's what I'm working on. Going to brand Sue and see what happens.
Well, you look for that name, Dr. Sue Polinsky. Dr. Sue, thank you for joining us, and thank you for being a sweetheart of the Piedmont Triad, especially in Greensboro, and we are glad that you joined us.
Thank you for having me, and I'm looking forward to putting your logo on my new blog.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Sue. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.